And even now, you're still managing to compete at that level. I mean, it's got to be exciting times. And we're probably still only just scratching the surface, aren't we?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really excited to see how pickleball explodes in the next couple of years, especially in Europe. We've got this Road to Aarberg, which is sort of the pro pickleball tour in Europe, which is now sort of a bit more formalised. So the pro pickleball tour, you get points, and then which is leading to the finals, which we're playing in St. Anton Aarberg next weekend.
Which country is that?
Austria.
Austria, right.
And so from the Revolution Cup, English Open, Nyköping Open, and the Stuttgart Open, you accumulate points. And then
they're
the
all like ranking tournaments.
Yeah, and the top eight in each division then qualify for the finals.
And who determined that then?
The guys at the Pro Pickleball Tour, Magnus, great guy. He's kind of got this big sort of vision of how big it can get, which is really exciting. You know, they've announced a 2025 schedule now with eight tournaments. And they're all a couple still being confirmed.
This is just in Europe.
So they're trying to create a full sort of, like, you know, these finals next weekend are kind of like that sort of tennis ATP tour finals where the top eight go in and you try and, you know, test your hand in that way.
Does this get sanctioned by the EPF or something, or is it part of, or are they running alongside?
Currently it's own thing, but they'll be looking to partner it because it will be the sort of foundation and main pro tour with the key events that the pro players will look to play.
So that all sort of that, so come sort of January. So is the season going to be like January to January sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's eight events. The first one starts in March and then the finals are in start of December in Aarberg.
So you're going to have to sort of sort out your work, holiday, diary, schedules, or are they still at the
weekend?
Don't
tell work.
I'm sure they won't. But I mean, these tournaments are still at the weekends though, aren't they? Most of them at the moment. But
thankfully, yeah. I think the challenge that will start happening, especially for, you know, myself and people that work, is how it's working in the States as well, is you play singles on the Thursday, then doubles on the Friday, and then doubles on the Saturday, and then it's championship Sunday.
What, like the Open?
So you have Sundays just for all the finals or the bronze medal matches.
Right.
So you can get sort of crowds to come in and watch, and, you know, that will lead to people buying tickets and things like that. But what it does mean in the short term is instead of it being one day holiday you need to take for work off, you have to take 2 days or 3 days if it's a, you know, flying on a Wednesday, for example. So that's the kind of cat and mouse kind of, or chicken and egg scenario. I think that will start happening more and more to sort of look to professionalize the event, because it's great, you know, it's great pickleball tournaments have the festival and the amateurs being able to play, and they're playing, you know, like the English Nationals, phenomenal tournaments, how many players it was, 600, 1,000, 700, 1,000 players, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head how many. And all of that, but it, you know, it'd be great to have
a silver medalist.
But it'd be great to have a sort of a professionalize of the sport, whether it's not necessarily nationals, but these tournaments that, you know, people can go, oh, well, I know that final is going to be on Sunday at lunchtime. Right. I can tune in and watch it, rather than, you know, sometimes it was people. I had some people on the European champ saying, oh, and I went to log on to the stream and there was no one on it, or it was like a random game that I didn't really understand because the timings were out or something. At least they can sort of look to professionalize it by having more streamlined timings, kind of know who's actually going to be on court when.
Yeah.
Which will get more and more people watching the sport, which brings in finances.
It does. I mean, that leads us to the PPL. I mean, you've got a relationship with Channel 4 now, haven't you?
Yeah, which is really exciting. You know, we have Channel 4 Sports are publishing a 30-minute highlights package from all of our... We're both musical voices.
On TV?
Yes.
Or is it going to be online?
It's online, and it's on their Channel 4 YouTube sport channel. So we've had the first two go on and they've been pretty awesome. Their actually coverage is really, really good, which is, it's great. And it's great promotion for the sport. You know, they've got a lot of traction from it, not in just purely pickleball, which is exciting, sort of going on into season three, where we're looking to get a couple more team franchises going. We're looking to try and expand it even more, and make it more of a, you know, of a professional sport style thing.
I'm so pleased how the PPL has, I mean, this is what, second season. I mean, how it's grown so quickly and the success of it. I mean, what are you now? You've got two more weekends to go, and then the grand finals again. We do this similar format.
Exactly the same. We're doing the same thing. Roehampton Club, then Hampshire Court Hotel, then Halton Tennis Centre, which was just announced for the final in April. Starting to plan for season three, but yeah, as I said, you know, I think I was here last time. It was 14 months ago. We were doing the first round of PPL on one tennis court,
yeah,
in this really sweaty, horrible little dome, and now we've got these, you know, full weekend planned with schedules of festivals, clinics, nice. Masters play, Challenger play, Premier play, which involves, you know, some of the best 50 plus players in Europe, some of the best Open players in Europe. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, you great. Must be pleased with that as well. I mean, Ed and you guys who've got behind it all, mm-hmm. I mean, you must be really proud of where that's going. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you ever see it up, I mean, like a football league of pickleball clubs? Because there's so many pickleball clubs opening now. Mm-hmm. Where I know we've got SEPL down here, and I know that's being spread around the country a little bit, where maybe we've got every week there's some sort of competitive, mm-hmm. not a festival, but, you know, maybe Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, and that sort of thing happening. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's in anyone's sort of vision at the moment, you know.
Yeah, I guess the difficulty is until there are dedicated facilities that you can sort of tie a club to, that becomes difficult to do, you know. Most of the clubs in the England, I would imagine, are sort of clubs that base out of a sports hall.
Yep.
Or a venue that they can try and book in, and they might have two venues, so they can go two times a week rather than once.
I think we've got five. You've come to one of ours, mm-hmm. you know, each time you've come. That's the biggest one we have with five courts.
Exactly. All the others are four courts. You know, as soon as you can get that hop, you can get the Franklin Pickleball Club, you can get a similar one up in rugby, you can get another one in Manchester, you can get one in Norwich.
Yeah.
You then kind of can start going, right, we're going to create a league between these matches, and we're going to do it every third weekend, and the winner of the league, XXX, like, and you go from there, and that's how the sport blows up.
There was talk that the Open was so successful now, and that because of the scheduling and so many people, that there might even be some qualifiers maybe thinking about that coming forward, and people saying, well, how's that going to work? But maybe that you, mm-hmm. if you don't enter the qualifiers, you can't get into the Open, but you don't have to win, but you have to be a qualifier.
I think that's also will happen for the Nationals as well. You know,
Nationals was a great success. It was a great success,
but, you know, that capacity is absolutely maxed out. And unless you want to make the week even longer for, you know, the volunteers and the players, you need to sort of streamline it somehow, you know. I think having a pro category, which isn't necessarily a round robin, you know, if you're playing 4.0, 4.5, 3.5, all of those categories, you want to go there and you want to try and win, but you want to also have a few games. You don't want to play one game and be knocked out.
No, I think a lot of people will go to Nationals because they felt like it's a long way to go. If you live in the South, go to Bolton and only mm-hmm. play three games. And
well, exactly. You know, but I think if you're entering in the pro category, that should be double elimination, or, you know, single elimination with a back draw to bronze.
Yeah.
Because you are entering the pro category or the open category, for example. I don't think it's we need to make sure, you know, I know you're playing in the pro, but we need to make sure you get four games. I think, you know, again, another thing to hopefully professionalise the sport going forwards is you are signing up to play in the pro category. It's, you know, if you lose, you're out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but then that is the ultimate bit, isn't it? I mean, even I've talking to people in the amateurs, and some of them, like, playing in their category, their age category, and some of them are thinking, do you know what, I might just go and have a go at the Open next year. Just go 18 plus in the Open and just go, because that's where you're going to get challenged. Because I think what's happening a little bit is in some of the age categories, people are playing the same people, or there's not so many, and mm-hmm. there's not that as much a challenge. And some of us are even thinking, like, oh, just drop down a level age-wise because you get more competition, mm-hmm. you know, or you step up your duper rating.
I think that's what will...
We all want to be competitive.
I think that's what will lead to those categories becoming more competitive as well, because, you know, if anyone can just enter the pro category because they want to have a few games against myself, James, all the top players, because they go, well, I'm guaranteed four round robin games.
Yeah.
They'll enter it because, you know, it's actually quite good value, and it's a good day for them. Whereas it makes it then trickier for, you know, I don't want this to come across as like a selfishly thing at all, but we play a round robin where in a group of five, where three of the four games are games you're going to win 11-0, 11-1, not really games. You then you win one game, which is a closest game, and then you get put into a match against a good pair, and you've not even really played much all day. You're like, here we go, which is obviously, you know, you will get that if you start in the early rounds, but if it's like a knockout, the rounds will start and they'll get stronger each round, rather than people sort of playing for points and trying to sort of play a little bit of jigsaw and chess to see how they can sort of plot their way through a draw through a round robin.
you know, you're not alone there. I mean, look, as a club, we've ranked every member of the club now. You know, we've got a ranking committee that's like, so that we've got beginners, intermediates, and advanced. And advanced has got two categories, advanced one, advanced two, intermediates. And the idea being is that certain nights, so that people, no matter what level you're all going to get the right level of competitive pickleball.
I think that's important. I think, you know, people, you know, it's nice to come and play against the pros, but it's also, it's quite demoralising if you go to every tournament and you want to, you know, play in the 4.5 category when you're a 4-0 and you just play four games and lose 11-2 in each one. That's,
yeah,
over time that gets pretty demoralising. You'd rather play in a category, okay, it might be 4.0 and you don't want to be 4.0, but, and you have a chance of winning it. Like, I think that's much more fun. Like, and you have competitive games. Every single game is competitive. You have a chance of winning. And, you know, unless you're doing the opposite and actually being a 4.0 playing in a 3.5 category.
Sandbagger.
Exactly.
Yeah, no.
Where you just do it sort of just so you can win the gold. I know you've done that a couple of times, potentially.
No, yeah. No. No gold yet. I introduced my wife to the sport and she goes and wins gold and silver. You know, anyone who is watching or listening, I would recommend getting some coaching from these guys. My game has elevated in the last, well, we haven't even been playing just over 2 years. But since coaching from yourself, Thaddea, you know, just learning some of the concepts of how to play and where to stand or how to hold your paddle. I mean, my game's elevated. I know personally, I feel it has. And even now I've got you in my head. And, you know, we as a club have got about sort of 8 or 9 volunteers who coach, you know, and like we have a super coaching night on a Monday night every 5 weeks, five courts, 5 different coaches. And we'll say, right, well, I'll do one court and we choose what we want to do. And Darren the other day said, I'm doing Louis Shovel. Yeah, because it was a great drill. And actually I've got it in my head sometimes now on a court. You're in my ear. It's like, oh,
it's a bad thing, I think.
No, it's not, because actually you're thinking, oh, defense, quick, get down. And you know, you'll only get better by playing against better people, but you'll only get better by being coached as well and practicing. But that's the one thing a lot of us don't do is practice.
I think actually that's a really good point, because, you know, even from our point of view, there's so many new players coming into the sport. So Molly O'Donoghue, she's been playing 5-6 months now. And she's already national champion, now European champion as well. Absolutely phenomenal player.
Who invited her along?
I know, exactly. Well, I'm quite fortunate. I'm playing mixed doubles with her. So, but
and she knocked you out. Didn't she?
We don't talk about that.
I did look and I did have a little wry smile.
But she's got a slightly different style to how other people play.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah Zucca-Motta as well. Katie Morris has got a different style of play. And so even I'm like picking up little tips and how they hit certain shots and how to read certain things off them. So even though they're newer to the game, they bring something that's new to it, which you have to go, oh, like, here we go. Right, we need to sort of react. And it's actually helped me develop my game a bit more as well, which is really nice.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to, yeah. And there's, and also the sort of, I suppose the paddles are changing a little bit as well. And there's a couple of paddles that might be taken off the market next year. There's a rumor.
I think there's some rumors about it. You know, there are paddles which are much faster off the face than others. Like I was playing in Stuttgart and a few of them were using the new Euler paddles and I got hit one. I was like,
don't worry, you're going to bleep it out. Mikey, bleep that one out, mate.
But like, so someone hit the new Euler paddle and I was like, oof, flipping it, that's come off quickly. But you know, all the paddles have their pros and cons. Like those paddles are hugely poppy and they're really good if you're, you know, good at driving the ball. But after a while, you start working out if you can get a dink low enough or a wall below the net, it's very hard for them to control because it comes off higher if they're trying to hit a dink and then you're set up on your shot. So all paddles have, you know, the Franklin paddles are designed to be really good control. The Euler paddles are much more poppy. The Pro XR paddles are very spinny. They've all got their sort of like different...
And the stand-up paddles have got everything, you know, that stand-up.
I can't comment on that.
You possibly can't, but I can. But no, but then do you not find... So I suppose like, when a paddle pops and the ball comes at you quite quickly, and I suppose you're using a certain brand of paddle and that someone's using a different type of paddle, but maybe that you need to go and practice with these other paddles, because obviously for your reaction times, you know, these things happen quicker, or, you know, you just got to be on your game, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, and you can get used to it quite quickly. And, you know, I think still the aim for me to, when I'm playing against people, is keep the ball below the net, and it stops them speeding up as much as it's possible. But in my practice, if you know the power in the paddles is increasing, I'm just going to stop doing volleys close to the wall rather than from 7 feet. I might do them from 4 feet or 3 feet and start still trying to do the same. And that ball then comes at me at double the speed. Because like, you know, when you're doing practice and doing those kind of, I'm doing it against a wall. If it could be carnage in practice and crazy in practice when you're on court, it's nice and easy. That's what you're hoping for.
Yeah, well, I just remember Johnny Wilkinson saying, you know, people say, oh, it's lucky. He said, it's not luck. He's practiced so much when he's kicking that he would never finish a session without doing 10 out of 10 kicks. Mm. And so when you get on there, it becomes muscle memory though, isn't it? I mean, there was a lovely picture of you. I was just watching you in the final with James, and you were just standing there because you weren't being involved and you just had your paddle out, and then it literally came to you and it went, and thanks, good night, bye bye, and you won the point, but you didn't even move your feet.
Yeah, I know. James was pretty jealous because he was absolutely exhausted after
that final. I
know,
all James was doing was moving around,
and I was just stood there waiting for the ball to come to me.
Waiting for you to, put your paddle under your arm and walk off for a bit.
It's like in football when someone does all that dribbling and then they just cross it and the guy taps it in and they get the goal. And
I think you did it on a couple of occasions. So the PPL, so we spoke about it. So season three, so what's going to be different about season three? What are you hoping for next year with the PPL three, I suppose?
Well, I think what's really exciting is there's already a lot of like talk about how big it's going to be, and you know, a lot of hype around it.
You know, we've more sponsors interested.
More sponsors. We've already had North London Storm were the first franchise team this year. So that's the one James Chowdhury's captaining.
Right. What do you mean franchise team?
So instead of just, you know, paying for a team and owning it for a season, North London Storm has a team owner and they've now got the team going forward. It's sort of like, you know, the New Jersey Fives. Like, it's like a proper franchise team. It doesn't just disappear at the end of the
Kansas
year.
City Chiefs.
Exactly.
It's a franchise going to be there.
And that's what we're looking for.
Well, signed up for a five-year period?
Yeah, a few-year deal. So we've got potentially a couple more coming through soon, which would be really exciting, because that kind of again leads to that sort of professionalization of the league, and you know, players potentially sticking in their teams, and you can build a sort of brand around that and going from there. Masters is, you know, getting bigger. The Masters level this year was strong. I think it's going to be even stronger next year. And Challenger level, you know, I think what's been really, really good about Masters and Challenger this year is it's got a lot more people into competitive pickleball more regularly, meaning the level has got significantly better. And, you know, some of the people playing in Challenger are top players. Like, you know, Thaddea is part of the Skechers team.
Yeah.
And she's captains one of the Thaddea Lock Pickleball Challenger team. And her Challenger team, Harry Feast and Lewis Ocke, beat the Premier team, Anakin and Lauren, in Nationals. In the round robin. So, you know, it shows how high the level is getting, and that will only continue to happen more and more.
You know, you're quite right, because, I mean, there's a couple of, there's three, I think, from our club who play in the Challenger and the Masters. And because we play against them every week regularly, and you go, oh, they're going up and playing, and they come back, and you think, oh, I'm getting points off them. And you go, oh, I am competitive. And so it rubs off on you on you come back. And also it sets you a challenge. Oh, okay. Some people perceive them as like, oh, when they go to tournaments, they're the sandbaggers and they're not. But they're just, you know, and it's great when they bring back what their knowledge and some of their skills. And I think we've had this challenge at our club where people think they should be in a higher grade than the others. And now we've encouraged some people who went to the Nationals. We've had a lot more medal winners for a little club. And I would say to anybody out there, you go to the Opens, go to the Nationals, go to Europeans, the pre-event tournaments, and the festivals, and play them, because it's competitive, it's fun. It's not overly serious, but you know, when you're on court, and it's, you will improve your game.
I think it also exposes you to a different style of play. You know, you can play against the same players at your same club on the same court every week.
Yeah.
You can go to another club and the players aren't necessarily any better rated or better.
No.
But they play a completely different style. You're like, what is going on? I think we had nearly 200 people or 200 people-ish sign up for the draft this year. I think it's going to be significantly higher than that next year. I think if you're as captain, you're going to have a bit of a headache trying to pick a team.
But with the franchise thing, so how will you have like one dedicated pro per franchise? Or could Thaddea and James all be in the same team?
It's unlikely. I mean, we're still trying to iron out a few of the details of how the franchise teams will go on year, because it'd be nice for, if it's possible to have, you know, the captain, for example, it would be nice if James could stay in the North London Storm next year and they could start building their brand around James being their captain and picking the team off that. But some of those details are not confirmed as of yet, so I can't say anything.
No, because I can see, I mean, like American football seems to have it quite well, isn't it? Because you can be a good team for a few years, but the team that's worst gets the best pick of the up-and-coming players, doesn't
which
it?
Once you get a full league being franchised, you can do. Until, whilst you've got sort of team sponsors that own the team for a year, you can't really do that because they might not own the team the year after. So, but once you've got a full franchise league, that's where you can start using previous year's results on a draft policy, which will then, you know, make it all that more exciting.
And I assume there are also dangers, though, because when someone's paying for something, they want results. Mm-hmm. And when you've got others, they're not. So they, I suppose in America, they have problems with some of the pros who think, you know, I'm bigger than they are. I don't know which one it is. Was it Dominic Cantolano, the commentator?
Yeah.
He was telling us, I was on the commentator's workshop, and he was just talking about in America, where I don't know if it's Ben Johns or Tyson, I think it might be Tyson, who really think they are the bee's knees. But he said, you got the East Coast and the West Coast, everyone knows pickleball. He said, in the middle of America, you could walk into a Walmart, no one would know who he was. So they need to sort of be pulled down a peg or two now and then, because they, but the money's behind them, they can't be challenged, you know, and obviously. He who has the peso has the say-so a lot of the time. And I suppose this is the challenge here. Not money is obviously very important to help grow the sport, but it's not letting somebody take over.
I think the benefit Europe
by the sport
still has, and I hope it doesn't lose it. I imagine at some point it will, unfortunately, but it's still in the pro category, has this really nice sort of friendship between the players. Like, you know, people go on court and they want to beat each other. Like, if I'm playing against James, I want to beat him.
Yeah, of course.
I'll do all I can to beat him. But the second we finish our game, like, we're still mates. We want to have a good time. Like, we want to keep playing. We want to be friends. Like, we don't want this sort of position where all of us fall out. We're all at tournaments and headphones trying to, you know, not speak to anyone or just keep ourselves to ourselves. I want pickleball to stay this hugely inclusive and sociable sort of sport that you play it because you love it. Like, yes, it'll become a professional sport and it'll become more and more serious and there's more money in it. You know, I've known that since COVID, basically. It's got bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
But my sort of main thing is, given my all on court, I've like, be relaxed and sort of enjoy it whilst being off the court.
But how do you manage that, Lee? Because as you get more and more people, you get more and more characters, different personalities, different egos. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, I suppose unless people sign up to a charter, I don't know. How do you manage that? And I mean, we still have that same challenge as a club. We're an all-inclusive club. Mm-hmm. People love the social aspect. Maybe it's because of the demographic and people are sociable and friendly. But I suppose as soon as you start maybe dangling money, it can change people.
I think it can, and it will. But, you know, I think...
Especially if it becomes your career. It's your...
Potentially,
it's your,
but, you know...
Where earning a living.
I think it's... important to sort of take a step back and realize, you know, yes, it's getting more professionalized, there's more money coming into it, but ultimately you play pickleball to have a good time. Like, it's not football money, which is a few hundred thousand pound a week that, you know, it's really cutthroat and all this stuff. It's still growing and it's still a lot of fun. And I think, you know, especially, you know, in the UK and Europe, everyone is at that top level wants to win, but they're very friendly off the court and, like, you know, they get on really well, that if someone came along and tried to sort of just break that by doing, I think they would be cast out pretty quickly or left to do what they want to do. Like, you go do that. We're just going to shouldn't have a couple of beers in the evening together and play against each other and try and beat each other tomorrow.
That's great. And long may that continue. Cause I mean, it's, that's what I love about this sport though. It's, I don't know, just a nice, it'd be so lovely though to have a pathway from the youngsters, all the, you know, going through the schools, going all the way up, so that they can. I don't know yet. I mean, you must be a role model to some now. I mean,
don't know about that, but I know is they are starting to put it in the curriculum at schools.
Okay.
And I saw in a thing Molly Nags did the other day that one of her students at Spicy Pickleball has been offered a scholarship to one of the universities for their pickleball. So
it is here in the UK.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Oh, wow. So I think it is really starting to grow now. So, you know, more and more of that's going to happen over the next couple of years, which is only a positive for the sport.
Yeah. And Pickleball England doing a fantastic job. This governance issue hopefully will be resolved, because I suppose once that is resolved and Sports England, then there's opportunity to go and source some money as well, and I suppose help more clubs be set up.
Yeah, facilities. I mean, the longer it drags on, you know, the more the unknown is, but we'll see what happens. I've got nothing else to say on that, to be honest, at the moment.
It's a tricky one.
The decision was meant to be in May, then it was meant to be June, then July, then August, then October, and, you know, we're in December now, and there's still no result, which has kind of just left it up in the air a little bit. So we'll see. You know, as I've always said, Karen and the team have done a phenomenal job since setting up Pickleball England, you know, to turn it from the first nationals to a couple of hundred people at Bolton to basically 1,000 people not being able to run a singles event is just a testament to the growth and all the leagues around the country. And, you know, the PPL is currently affiliated with them. So we'll see what happens when the result comes out.
There's some great stuff out. I mean, you've got the Southeast Doubles League and equivalent ones of those, the SEPL. You know, even in the 2 years I've been involved, it's just loving it, growing. Mm-hmm. It's just getting better. And I really hope that the centres like the Hop will get going, because there'll be, I think, 10 pickleball courts. And I've mentioned the word paddle, but
I think those facilities are going to be sold out and busy the second they open. There's now enough people playing pickleball in these certain zones that, you know, that Hop 10 courts is only 40 people. You get that on a Tuesday night playing, and that's,
I know,
and that they'll fill out very quickly. And I think people will be surprised at the usage and, you know, getting the,
I think they're all right, worried about the daytimes and
getting the model right and the membership and the, you know, how they run the F&B and all that stuff is very important. Yeah. So that's me sort of with my club management hat on.
Well, you have that daily struggle though. I mean, yours is a tennis and golf club.
Yeah, so Ramta Club's a private members club. It's a, you know, all sports, essentially. It's an American country club, Blanked in Putney.
Right.
Golf, tennis, paddle, pickle, croquet, gym, everything. Every sport you can think of. But it's a massive club there with 5,000 members. We're not talking of a
private members club,
which is, you know, a proper massive operation. And, you know, the Hop will be a big pickleball club, but it'll looks probably have a few hundred members to start with. So like the comparisons is not really there, but how the operation of it works is obviously as important, if not more, for a business like that when it starts.
Yeah, well, it's all about the infrastructure, isn't it? The logistics of it all, isn't it? The playing's the easy bit, isn't it? You just get on court and play.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You know, open at 7 o'clock in the morning, but I can see, like, you know, opportunities for schools going down there. You know, you've got U3As and doctors are prescribing mental health places for people, you know, to go and play. But
yeah, for sure.
So Christmas is coming up. Any plans?
Off to Germany on Friday. We've got the Cologne Open on Sunday, just playing mixed doubles and that to get a bit of practice in. Then a few days off in between, and then off to Austria on Thursday to play that tour finals.
Right.
And then home for Christmas, and then Egypt and India in January.
And how far ahead are you in your sort of diary? Is that it, or does things pop up?
There are some tournaments, but that is as far ahead as I'm at the moment. I can't really think about anything else at the moment. We'll see what happens. You know, there's MLP Australia, which would be, you know, I put my name in the draft, whether I get drafted or not, who knows. But, you know, if I could fly out there a few times next year,
it'd
be quite fun. But we'll see what happens. Like, there's a lot of good players, as I said before, in the Australian sort of Asia area. So getting drafted would be a good feat in itself. And then I'll go to the US Open in April, which would be pretty exciting. So the schedule will quickly build itself out. It's just sort of finding the time to do it.
I was going
to
say, and holding down a job as well. Oh, and so what would be 2025? What would be a successful year for you?
Oof, that is a very hard one.
I mean, considering you've won 17 gold medals this year.
Yeah, I said to myself last year when I was 16, if I could repeat that this year, I've done well, and I've just beaten that. So
18 then?
Yes. No, yeah, but, you know, I think if I can get anywhere close to that next year, maybe I just need some better partners, you know, to carry me through again.
Was it harder this year than it was last year, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the level in Europe is significantly stronger. There are still, you know, there are some tournaments which are don't have as many of the top players playing, which, you know, are easier to win or get deep in a draw, give yourself the chance to win. But the level of the play, you know, this time last year, I think the highest rated player, I think I was at like 5.7. And now you've got myself and James at both over 6. It's a load of 5.7s. Like, you can't be off your game and win anymore. If you're off your game, you're getting knocked out in the quarterfinals, which is a bit annoying, but also
it's very good. Yeah.
But it's also very good for the sport, I think, you know.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword for you, isn't it, as a player?
Well, I don't think it is. I think, to be honest...
You want to win, don't you?
I want to win, but, you know, I also want to win playing well.
Yeah.
And playing the best, yeah. which is why, you know, next weekend in Austria is going to be really, really exciting because it's the top 8 teams, the top 8 mixed teams, top 8 gender teams, and the top 8 singles players.
Representing the countries or pairings?
As pairings, yeah, around qualified.
So who are you going to Austria with?
So I'm playing men's doubles with James.
Right.
And mixed doubles with Molly.
Nice. Molly O'Donoghue.
O'Donoghue, yeah.
So that would be her first excursion, wouldn't it, into that area?
Yeah, so she played the Swedish Open and won gold with Sarah in that. And obviously came back and won nationals with her as well. she's playing women's doubles with Sarah in that. So it'd be really good to see how they can do on sort of with the top players. I think Paige's back. Thaddeus playing with her. Caroline and Carolina are playing together. Sabrina is playing with Molly Nags from Spain. So there's some very, very good pairs.
So that's before Christmas?
That is, yeah, the 13th or 15th of December.
And that will be streamed?
I think it will be, yeah.
And I'll that's in Austria. Link. Yeah, please, that'd be great. And we'll send the link out to all those people that are watching. Well, I was being given instructions to keep it down to an hour. We've just run over. Louis, can I just say thanks ever so much, mate?
That's all right. That's been
congratulations.
Really good. Thank you very much.
You know, that's one hell of an achievement.
Yeah, it is. I think, yeah, just a massive testament to the team, you know.
Yeah, big
obviously
up the
I'm
team.
Sat here, but there were 13 other people that made it possible. And, you know, and England brought it home.
And I think it'd probably be good to thank all those people that got the Open going. I know Steve Beale was tournament director, his team, Simon Farr, and I can't remember all the other names, Frank Arrigo, because he was a founding member of
He's the president of the European Pickleball Federation.
Wasn't he not one of the founders?
Yeah,
Pickleball England as well with Karen.
So yeah, so just a massive thank you to
all
everyone for all their work, all the volunteers, the referees, everyone for that.
I got a
wouldn't
referee.
Have been possible to do it. And
do you like having a referee? Because I just before we go, I just find it slows your game down a little bit. If you're on a bit of a rhythm and you want to speed things up,
And I think the refs, you know. They do a very, very good job. They are, as we say, they're volunteers and they're new to it. And the more experienced, they're more exposed to it, the more it will streamline the game. And I think that's, you know, testament again to the sport. You know, how many refs did they have at the Europeans? There were like 20 referees.
Yeah.
Which was great. And it's imperative again, you know, for pro sport going forwards, there is a referee sort of overseeing the match.
And it was great that So as us amateurs, we're getting some as well because it makes them feel a bit more professional as well, and it just helps everyone as well. I think it was great. I'm going to take a risk here and say, look, happy Christmas and happy New Year, because this will come out hopefully before.
Okay. Yeah.
So Mikey will get it out. I wish you all the best next season. And
thank you very much.
We'll catch up again, no doubt.
See you around soon.
Thanks,
you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you,
bud.